Dr. David R. Henderson has joined us. He'll be with us till about 8:50 or a little bit thereafter as we're going to talk about illegal immigration. And David and I are kind of on opposite sides of this. I mean, I've been kind of a real hawk about illegal immigration and being against it. And yet David is looking at this much more academically than I am. And I'm actually willing to say that I could be wrong in some of my objections to illegal immigration. And I want to find out, and I want you to offer to our audience some of the ideas that you have behind why you think that we should not be so reflexively knee-jerk about this issue, I guess is maybe a good way to put it. And
right.
And you see more benefits than negatives to it. So.
Yes, I do, especially since the 1996 Welfare Reform Act. I mean, here's the standard case that economists make for completely open immigration. Both sides gain from trade. People come in here, they work at jobs, that means people want to hire them, that means people value their output at least as much as they're paying them, and obviously the people who come here benefit, the people who hire them benefit, they pass on some of those benefits to consumers in the form of lower prices of the goods they produce. I mean, there was that movie, which I still haven't seen, A Day Without Mexicans, imagine that suddenly you had no people helping in restaurants and so on. Granted, there'd be adjustments. There'd be more capital-intensive restaurant industry and so on. But the initial price increase would be substantial, and even after you got rid of, even after you did all the adjustments, you'd still pay more for restaurant meals. You'd still pay more for gardening. And, of course, I'm focusing on the stereotypical immigration jobs, but, of course, there are ones that are not part of the stereotype. There are doctors, there are computer programmers, and there are all kinds of people in between. And in fact, if you look at an economist friend of mine who gave a talk on this recently is a young economist at San Jose State University named Ben Powell, pointed this out, that if you look at the wage structure of the immigrants coming into this country, it's like an hourglass. In other words, you've got a fair number of people at the top coming in at high income levels, computer programmers.
Like folks from India.
Yeah.
H-1B visas.
Folks from India, folks from Canada, like me, I came from Canada, folks from Britain. And they come in and they get a very high pay. And then you got a whole bunch of people at the bottom coming in and getting low pay, and not a lot in the middle. Now look at what our wage structure is in the United States without just keeping immigrants aside for a minute. It's a diamond. In other words, a very small number of people at the top getting a lot of pay, a whole lot of people in the middle getting the middle pay, and a few people at the bottom getting low pay. And so it's a nice complement to what we have. The middle class isn't being that displaced in their jobs. The high-income people are being somewhat displaced, but there aren't as many of them. The low-income people are being somewhat displaced, but there aren't as many of them. And I use displaced loosely. In fact, if you look at our unemployment rate, it is very low. It's what economists think of as full employment. So it means that anyone who really wants a job pretty much can find it, except for very unskilled workers who can't quite meet Arnold's minimum wage or the federal minimum wage.
Well, and there has been the contention, and I believe the studies have shown, that the native-born American worker without a high school education who's working in, say, a higher-paid job than they might normally be able to get with their level of education, those people have tended to be displaced in certain instances.
Yeah, and again, displaced meaning, loosely speaking, in other words, they still have jobs, it's just they pay less.
Maybe they went from a $10 an hour job to a $7 an hour
no,
job.
No, not even close.
Not even close?
Let me give a $10 an hour job to a $9.52 an hour job. Okay. Here are the numbers, and this is from a critic of immigration, George Borjas at Harvard, and he says that in the short run, high school dropouts lose 8.2% of wages due to competition from immigrants, and in the long run, 4.8%. So $10 an hour, a 4.8% drop is 48 cents, that's $9.52. Now, that doesn't mean that they're worse off over time. It just means that they're worse off due to the immigration. There are other forces in the economy, increasing capitalization and so on, that are driving their real wages up over time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a small hit, in other words. And an economist on a blog, who I'm a fan of, a guy named Brian Kaplan, said that here was his comment after giving Borjas's numbers. And this is what passes in economics for pessimistic estimates of the effect of immigration. And this is the pessimist talking. And he's saying the numbers are low. Other people like David Card up at Berkeley are saying that the loss in wages is even lower than that. George Borjas is the extreme among academically respected economists.
Okay. David, one thing, though, I want to go back to. You mentioned that you hadn't seen the movie called A Day Without a Mexican, but it
right.
was a film that basically attempted to say to people, hey, if it weren't for all the Mexican immigrants, you know, illegal immigrants, you know, American society in a lot of places would grind to a halt. But at the same time, some people would say, okay, you know, in that type of situation, at the same time, though, yeah, if we didn't have, you know, all those people have come across, but at the same time, American society wouldn't even recognize the terms Norteño and Sereno.
Sure.
Okay.
I still had to think a minute when you said it.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
But what I'm saying here is that one of the things that we cannot get around and we cannot ignore is that there are tremendous numbers of illegal immigrants that are involved in illegal activity that are in America's prisons, and they do, and that does pose a great cost to the nation. And we're hearing now of the Salvadoran gang, the MS-13, that has taken up roots in the suburbs outside Washington, D.C. in Northern Virginia, and causing a lot of problems there, whereas they didn't even exist in that area 20 years ago. So I don't know that we can necessarily say that, hey, you know, there are so many benefits from illegal immigration that we ought to just have open immigration.
Okay. Let me address that.
Okay.
There's a basic theorem in economics, and I can say it in words. It says basically when you have a problem, use the tool most fitting and most focused on that problem, which is pretty much common sense. So we got these huge gains from open immigration, and then we got this one problem, which is a certain percentage of them being criminals. There's a very simple solution: deport the criminals. In other words, it doesn't mean deport the 95 or 98 or whatever percent it is who aren't doing that. It just means deport those people who are doing all this bad stuff.
Well, I guess the other political question is, why do we have such a problem doing that?
I don't know. I don't know. But
that's the one I think that's the one that a lot of Americans would want to answer, you know, the question to answer to. And maybe we don't trust, and this might be the case where having them in our prisons, we feel like we can keep an eye on them. We don't trust that if we send them back to their home countries that they're going to be incarcerated, or they're just going to be released, and then they're going to come back over the border and, you know, resume their criminal activities here.
Yeah. I mean, another solution, that's a good point. Another solution, therefore, would be to say, instead of deporting them, just to have them say, you know, have an island somewhere where you can basically have a substantially lower cost of taking care of them because you're hiring non-Americans.
Right, right. The island of youth that, like Castro has off the coast of Cuba.
Didn't even know about it.
Yeah, where he puts all of his political prisoners.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah.
So, that's where they banish the political prisoners and the homosexuals.
Do they still banish homosexuals? I heard he had loosened up on that.
Yeah, well, they did for a long, long time. Those two groups of people ended up on the Isle of Youth.
I know.
There.
Castro has been very, very hostile to homosexuals. Yeah. But let me get back to immigration. But let's say that my solution isn't adopted, as somehow I think it won't be. Does that mean we should go to another solution that we can be pretty sure by thinking through it in advance that won't work either? I mean, there was a famous line in that that show on British television, Yes Minister, Yes Prime Minister.
Yeah.
Someone says, something ought to be done. And then the answer is, this is something, therefore it should be done. And I think that's the problem with a lot of government policy. People have to do something, so they choose something, even knowing in advance it isn't going to work. And so this whole idea of building a wall to keep illegals out is a joke. I don't know if you saw those two Vegas comedians, Penn and Teller, they set up a wall built to government specs, and they had some people say, okay, who can be fastest, you know, over the wall or around the wall? And the people who actually drilled a hole through it got through in a couple of minutes. And so there's no really good solution unless, well, this is not a good solution. I don't think most Americans would advocate having people there ready to shoot people coming through. And I hope they wouldn't. And I think short of that, it's just very hard to do.
Well, but one of the basic problems, though, with the comprehensive, the quote-unquote comprehensive immigration reform is the president talking about a tamper-resistant ID card for every legal foreign worker. Well, there's no such thing as a tamper-resistant anything.
Right. Ask any 18-year-old trying to get into a bar.
Yeah.
You know, so... But I want to just mention something else, too, because there's this stereotype of immigrants who are on welfare. And in fact, the stereotype was never valid. And it's even less valid now with the Welfare Reform Act. With the Welfare Reform Act, it's illegal. And let me just tell you some of the things that they can no longer, illegal immigrants can no longer qualify for. This is from an article in Reason Magazine about a year ago. They can no longer qualify for food stamps, housing assistance, Medicaid, and Medicare-funded hospitalization. The only services illegals can still get are emergency medical care and K-12 education. And so we've already tightened up a good bit on that. The other thing I want to point out is there's this fear people have about illegal immigrants who make money here and send it home. They make American dollars and send it home. Well, the odds are those dollars, once they get home, aren't just going to stay in Mexico. They're going to come back and purchase goods. But let's take the extreme case where those dollars did stay in Mexico. Guess what? What did we just get? We got services of immigrants in return for pieces of paper that cost our federal government a couple of pennies on the dollar to print. And by the way, the cost of printing a $100 bill is not 100 times the cost of printing a $1 bill. And so we essentially get real goods and services in return for pieces of paper to the extent the U.S. dollar is an international currency, which it still is.
Okay. But David, here's the other thing that you know, people on the anti-immigration side would say, and I have a lot of concern about this as well. When you get a certain critical mass in the country, they'll start to agitate for more and more particular rights. For example, illegal immigrants ought to be able to vote in elections. And it almost seems like, and when I see some of this, I wonder myself, okay, what happens to the whole idea of citizenship? Is there any value to being a citizen of a state any longer? Or is that just all washed away?
Well, it would be washed away if they achieved that, but I don't see them achieving that. I mean, I see people lobbying for it. I don't see huge numbers of people lobbying for it. But some people in the Democratic Party lobby for it because they see it as a source of votes. But I don't see that all these illegal immigrants get to vote. I know when I was an immigrant and I was a legal one, I didn't dare vote. There's some kind of record of it, and then that'd be a crime, and I'd have it on my record. And granted, I might be the extreme because I have a lot to lose later on. But there are a whole lot of people in the middle who have a lot to lose too, and I think that would prevent them from voting illegally. And again, I don't see where has the bill been passed? In what state legislature has a bill been passed giving illegal immigrants the right to vote? I haven't seen it.
No, we haven't seen it either. But that's not to say that we wouldn't necessarily see that coming down the line. I think that's one of the concerns.
But then that's a reasonable concern. So then if you're going to have the concern, get informed about the concern. Go and check state legislatures one by one and see if anyone has presented a serious bill that's gotten more than a handful of votes for that. I bet you there's never been such a bill that's gotten out of committee.
Well, there's going to be more conversation on this topic because it's topic number one on talk radio and across the country. And David, we'll get together and talk about this again.
Thanks.
Hey, David, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Mark.
Dr. David R. Henderson, our guest, and he is the co-author of the book Making Great Decisions in Business and Life. And his website is Dr. David R. It's actually DavidRHenderson.com on the World Wide Web.